Hello and welcome back to the Second and Two podcast. I'm your host, TB. Got my co-host, producer extraordinaire, enforcer of the tickets. Don't park your car where you're not supposed to for longer than you're supposed to.
Yeah.
Joey, what up, Joe?
Nothing. There's a funny story about that, actually, that happened yesterday. My supervisor, he was looking at like the appeals because they caught up to zero. So everything that's coming in is within like the last couple weeks now. And so there was one about a handicap. Someone parked in the handicap spot without a placard. And they were like, hey, so like I just got off of work, or like I was getting my pay stub or something about work. And like, I left and I was on my way out of the like downtown area, and I stopped in that spot to hit the bathroom because like I have a high risk pregnancy and blah, blah, blah. And they uploaded pictures of all this stuff that like happened that night. And then so he looks at me, he's like, what would you do? And I was like, I mean, I don't want to use the exact words because it'll sound worse, but I was like, I'm going to let them keep the fine, right? Like they could still pay that. And then he looks to like a newer guy who's been here for like a month. He's like, what would you do? And he was like, well, I think I would take away the fine. You know, if they don't have a history of nothing else, like, I guess it's understandable for the one time.
Mm-hmm.
And then I asked him, I was like, well, what are you doing? He was like, well, I'm going to leave it for my supervisor. But he was like, I would still let them hold the fine. I was like, the easiest way for me to put this is to say you have a dude, right? Obviously, they can't be in the same circumstance as a woman. But say he was just in the hospital a couple days ago, got out, still like weary about his body, stops in the handicap. That's not going to change the fact that he's still in the handicap. But because it's a woman, it's a little different. You know what I mean? And so I was like, in that sense, you got to be objected to both sides where they have the same like fairness to it, so I would still let the other dude hold it, so why not her? And he was like, I agree with that. He's like, it's kind of along those lines, but he was like, I almost got swayed to dismiss it, but I think in all fairness of everyone, it would be upheld still. And I was like, I agree.
Okay. Interesting conversations. You guys have like moral dilemmas. Like, never thought that the parking gang could be so difficult.
Well, when it comes, because you could appeal all your sites, right? So,
yeah.
After the first like couple, depending on if they're the same, like that's gonna get upheld every time, regardless of what they write. But like, if it's someone like her, like how there's no history of nothing, and like.
You consider all that.
It's going to be more favorable to change it the first time than over time being like, this guy's history is just beyond repair at this point. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that everyone will write any situation. Like, there's a lot of like, oh, my kid sick, had to use the restroom, parked, and I ran inside the nearest store or whatever. Or it's like, I was only in a spot 5 minutes. We hear that one the most, like in person. Which grinds my gears because it's like, just tell me what you're doing. I don't care what you're doing for 5 minutes. Tell me where you went. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I want to have a real interaction than, oh, I've parked 5 minutes. I had to go that way. Like, I don't care about being broad about everything. Like, okay. I walked down the street, saw your car, and I'm walking away now. You know what I mean? Like, I could do the same thing. I don't know.
You're like, if you're going to give me an excuse, it has to be a real one.
Yeah. No, exactly. Like, I had a dude. This was the other day too. I had a dude. I was supposed to work the north side of our town. Ended up being just like the physical meters with like coins and stuff, right? And it was literally right in front of our office. I got that dude's car. I was working on the car in the back, and they're like, "Hey, that's our car. Like, you guys just gave us a ticket." And I was like, this one right here, it was a Jeep. I was like, this one's yours? They're like, yeah. And like, they had Alaska plates, so I was like trying to see what they would say. Mind you, this guy had a crazy toupee. Hilarious to me, by the way. Did not fit his type of hair in general. And I was like, all right, well, like, He was like, oh, he paid. And I was like, he's like, it must have just expired. And I was like, oh, okay. Like, how long ago was that? He was like 30 minutes. I was like, so you paid 30 minutes ago or it expired 30 minutes ago? Because on the physical meters, there's a countdown after like the time expires that lets them get like a grace period. And so if it's blank, it's blank. And he was like, oh, we paid like 30 minutes ago, so it should have just expired. And it's like, all right. I was like, well, how about you pay, you know, another 30 on this meter and I'll take care of that one for you. You know what I mean? But I was like, I doubt they paid. They came back with bags of stuff. Like they were walking around downtown. It's a farmer's market tonight. So they had like all sorts of stuff. I was like, no way you're going to say it 30 minutes. You could read that the thing says 30 minutes, but it actually lets you pay for 3 hours regardless. So they don't know that. Yeah. But it's like, come on, bro. You didn't pay nothing.
Yeah.
But regardless, sorry about work talk. It's just all within the last couple of days. So on my mind.
Well, that's why you come to this podcast. You know, we want to hear about the tickets that people get for parking. We're going to have a parking ticket segment at the start of every podcast.
I didn't know we changed the name to Meter Man on patrol.
Meter Man. I mean, you really can't have a podcast about anything, it seems like, these days. So, yeah, it probably somehow work. we're going to get into some NFL news. We will do our Week 18 awards, and then we're going to talk about the wild card games. We're coming to you from a Saturday morning, so we do know the results of the CFP semifinal games. Your boy Jody went 5-1. So if you followed with him, you did okay on the bets in those two games. I projected a Notre Dame Texas national championship, fully acknowledging the possibility that Ohio State could, maybe would, beat Texas, and that I just couldn't handle that. Go blue. But it happened. Texas, you know, put up a dogfight. Texas was right there at the 1 yard line, ready to tie the game under 5 minutes, and it just went the other way. You know, it's one play. Credit to Ohio State for being able to battle through what was not their best game. And we said Texas hadn't played a complete game all year. I think that was the closest they came to doing it, but they offensively just didn't get it going quick enough to put themselves in position to win that game. So congratulations to Ohio State. Congratulations to Notre Dame. Notre Dame finished their game in dramatic fashion with not quite a walk-off field goal, but pretty close. We were actually pretty close to the exact score on that one, not too far off. I think I had a 23-21, and it was 27-24. So, and luckily with that score just going a little bit higher, we actually hit the over as you projected. So we get a Notre Dame Ohio State national championship, which we will break down before that game happens Monday, January 20th. So we'll break that down. We'll obviously give you all of our thoughts on that when it gets there. But today is for the NFL. Super wild card weekend. We've got 6 games on tap. 2 today, 3 tomorrow, 1 on Monday. The schedule looks like this. Today at 4:30 Eastern, you get Chargers at Texans. And then after that at 8 Eastern on Amazon, Steelers at Ravens. Tomorrow at 1 Eastern, CBS, Broncos at Bills.
Right, early.
Then after that, 4:30 Eastern on Fox, you got the Packers at the Eagles. And then the nightcap, 8 Eastern on NBC, Commanders at Bucks. And then finally, Monday Night Football on ESPN, 8 Eastern, Vikings at Rams. And then I'll conclude Super Wild Card Weekend. That's what we've got on deck. Before we get to those games and our Week 18 awards, just going to go around the league. We talked about coach hirings and firing, or retentions and firings, if you will. Hasn't been too many updates since we last talked a couple days ago. Really just a lot of interviews happening. Obviously, we've learned that the Detroit Lions coordinators are both hot candidates. Likely both seem like they could get a job. Thought it was interesting. Aaron Glenn is taking an interview with everyone except the Patriots. He turned them down. That seemed very pointed. I feel like he was, you know,
a little bit there,
taking a stand with Gerard Mayo there, which I respect. And Ben Johnson, you know, looks like he's going to finally take a job. It feels like Did you see that there was a teenager or like early 20s?
Yeah, Caleb kid. Williams.
Yeah, that prank Caleb Williams. His name is like Ben Johnson. And he tricked Caleb Williams into thinking like he was the Ben Johnson and taking the job. And Caleb was hyped. Caleb was hyped up. So Bears brass, that should let you know. Caleb secretly he wants Ben Johnson. So just take that into account.
He is one of the people.
In regards to the playoffs, Jody, we got some injury updates, some game site updates. What do we got?
Yeah, so Jalen Hurts clears protocol. It's going to put a damper in my notes later on in the episode because I wrote them prior to that happening. So I might have to change my mind a little bit.
I mean, depending on what you said, I still think it's fair to point out, maybe I should save this point when we talk about it. I'll save it when we talk about the game. I got some stuff on that. I'll save it.
All right.
Go ahead.
Zay Flowers as well for the Ravens. Been ruled out for this game later tonight.
Tough. That's a bummer for them.
I was going to say, that's one of their big time playmakers. For the receiving core. We got Rams Vikings moved to Arizona. Arizona. I was going to say that for when you brought up the schedule on Monday and say Viking Rams at Arizona. Dumb, but you know.
It's I'll tell you, that situation right now is extremely sad, and yet I can't help but feel a little bit inspired by the reaction and reception, the generosity. Number one, the Arizona Cardinals, you know, they've opened up their team facilities. They sent two charter planes to the Rams to pick up all of their players, their families, some of them dogs and cats, like everything, so they could kind of get away from what's happening in a lot. And for a lot of them, like some of their homes, you know, are in danger, if not already lost by the fires. And so great generosity from Michael Bidwell, the Arizona Cardinals owner, and that organization. You know, they're treating the Rams first class, especially knowing, you know, it's a divisional opponent. And in a situation like this, though, it just doesn't matter. You know, humanity wins out, which I just, that's why I say it inspires me a little bit. You've seen a lot of like relief efforts. There's a lot of Rams fans who have donated to the LA fire departments and charities. Yeah, all the funds that are happening right now to help fight and combat that. Sounds like
Rams got like a shirt too that was they're selling to help with that and all that too. So
they
a lot of people moving pieces to help.
Kevin Demoff, their president, bought like 35,000 seats in the stadium for their season ticket holders. And they're like busing. They're offering charter buses to bus season ticket holders from LA to the game in Arizona on Monday. They're doing everything they can, I think, to make it accessible for fans. They're giving out a blue rally towel when they come into the game. They're going to paint the Cardinals field with the Rams logos and everything. They even brought the announcer, "Whose house?" You know, they're going to do all of that, so it will hopefully feel as close to a Rams home game as possible. I also thought, you know, on the Rams side of things, Kevin Demoff kind of came out and said, you know, a lot of their consideration was understanding that they have the team hotels that house, you know, 500 people, you know, between their team, the Vikings, the NFL officials, the, you know, just everyone who's involved in the game, and realizing that, you know, those rooms could be used for people who are losing their homes right now and who need a place to stay, a place to be safe. And so he said that was something that they took into consideration. And by making this decision, when they did, you open up those rooms and allow those people to be there. There's also, you know, they talked about, you know, if you host a game in the area, it takes a lot of personnel that might otherwise be fighting fires to be at the game. And, you know, God forbid someone who's watching the game, who's there, their home is burning down and they have to leave in that moment. There's just so many things they took into account. And when you hear all of it, it makes a ton of sense why they moved the game. It was the right move, truthfully. As much of a bummer as it is, it's definitely the, you know, I think it was the right call. And it was, again, humanity wins out in this situation. So a lot of good things coming from something truly terrible.
Definitely. A lot of efforts collectively. I've seen people who don't even live in California anymore, former residents though, and they're posting all types of different funds you could donate to and stuff. So big outreach for this, which is cool. Cool to see. Lastly, on this NFL news though, we got the Packers will not have Christian Watson, my guy. Got his knee blown out. So that's tough to see, too, because definitely a deep ball threat. You didn't want to say that time?
I mean, the Packers are super diverse and deep at receiver. So it probably does not hurt them as much as it might hurt another team to lose that guy. But you are right. There aren't a lot of guys on the roster who do replicate what he does as a vertical threat. And so that may hurt the Packers a little bit. I think the better news for the Packers is that Jordan Love appears to be okay. He'll be fine to play in the game and all that stuff. We'll see how he plays. The cold, you know, maybe affects him a little bit, but it seems like he's going to be okay, which is the more important news if you're a Packers fan. And then the only other thing, it's not playoff related, that has happened is it sounds like Deshaun Watson re-tore his Achilles, which is crazy. He had the surgery in October, re-tore it now. I saw a lot of things that, you know, generally when you have an Achilles restructuring, like that surgery, you're supposed to wear a boot for like 3 months, and we're not three months out from his surgery. He blamed it on like rolling an ankle in Miami. So that kind of points to like maybe he wasn't taking rehab.
Definitely not.
Seriously, like if he wasn't in a boot, you know, a lot of speculation there. I don't want to like place blame on the guy. Who knows how it happened or why it happened or what the deal was. It just does seem a little odd that he re-tore it. He's going to be out for all of 2026, it sounds like. It's a fair question to ask, I think, at this point, if we have seen the end of Deshaun Watson in the NFL.
I would assume so. I don't know how many years are left on his contract, but if there's one thing I do know, that boy's bred it up, and he's got two more years left.
Yeah. He's got 2 more years left, and then they did all that restructuring recently. But so like he's out for all of next year. So then the next year would be the last year, like 2026 would be his last season of that deal.
If I'm the Browns organization, I'm getting a QB this year because you struggled having one on the field last year with Zappe and Winston. This dude got hurt as well. It's like he doesn't perform to what you expected with giving him all the bread. So like you might as well start looking for something.
Well, even with the lack of performance, I think even more concerning likely is the lack of availability in his time there. He's been hurt. He's had like three straight season-ending injuries, basically. He can't stay on the field. So even if he was performing well, it wouldn't matter. And then you add in the fact that even when he is playing, he's not performing well. That's why I say, we very well could see the end for him there.
Yeah. Well, and the one time they made the playoffs, it was our guy Joe Flacco. It wasn't even him.
Yeah. All right, so before we preview these wild card games, we got to get to our Week 18 awards, the last one of the season. First and foremost, you guys know we always start by paying homage to our high school head coach, Coach Tukwa. It's the Tukwa Gamer of the Week Award. Who do you got, Jody?
All right, so this week, it's kind of funny because our boy Jared brought it up in our group chat, but I'm rolling Quentin Johnson here, bringing it full circle.
Shout out, Fonty.
A lot of Boo Boo Evans awards for my guy this year. But to close out the season, my guy finished with 13 catches, 14 targets, 186 yards. Hopefully, he can keep that rolling in the playoffs. I do believe Ladd McConkey's going to have a tough matchup this week with one of his former teammates. So we'll see if he could replicate, if not surpass, this performance in this week versus the Houston Texans.
Yeah, that Houston secondary pretty good with Lassiter and Stingley and all that. I mean, yeah, it's a good crew. My gamer of the week, I've got Bijan Robinson. The man got snubbed from the Pro Bowl, shows up for the last game, right? I mean, he gets 170 yards on the ground and 2 touchdowns versus Carolina. He finishes the year with 1,456 rushing yards, 14 touchdowns, 431 receiving yards, and then another touchdown receiving. I don't know how this man didn't make the Pro Bowl, truthfully. I mean, I don't know, and anytime you say snub, okay, well, who'd you put him in over? Okay, well, you can't put him in over Saquon. Saquon's a dog.
I don't know who else would be in.
Josh Jacobs had a great year. I think he just was very much so deserving. But Jahmyr Gibbs got that third spot, and truthfully, he shared the backfield with David Montgomery for most of the year. I know he finished the year strong, and he had a great game against Minnesota, but Pro Bowlers were announced before that. I'm just going to say that I think Bijan should have been in over Jahmyr Gibbs. All right? People can come at me for that.
What if you, say over Josh Jacobs? Well, I want to see what his production was.
I mean, Josh Jacobs had a fantastic season. All of the Green Bay big wins came with him producing on the ground. I also think he's somewhere in that top five in rushing.
Let me see what his passing receiving yards look like, because the rushing, Bijan has him surpassed. He's got 1,329 yards with 15 touchdowns and 342 yards receiving.
Numbers are comparable. They're pretty comparable. They're pretty similar. Again, but that guy's a Pro Bowler and Bijan wasn't. Now, I understand Green Bay was much better. Detroit was much better. Atlanta didn't make the playoffs. But truthfully, he was, out of all those guys, played with the worst quarterback situation between Kirk Cousins, especially in that mid-year struggle, and then going to a rookie quarterback towards the end of the year. And Bijan produced through all of it. So that's why I think he was deserving of it, you know. But hey, he finished the year right. He finished the year like a gamer. And even though they lost, he had a fantastic game. And I expect big things from him in 2025.
I would say he's going to be like the new Christian McCaffrey, I think, going forward with the dual threat out the backfield. And he's used even in passing downs as a blocker. So big upside for him going forward as well.
Next up,
we got the Jody's dog of the week. Now, I was hoping you didn't steal this one for your big fella, so I'm glad it was still open.
No. I let you have it.
I'm rolling Michael Pierce here with the INT to close out that game versus Cleveland. And I was hoping we could see a bigger return, but my guy said the bus ran out of tank or ran out of the gas in the tank. So he just slid on the field and was like, "Let's get it. Let's go celebrate." He got the ball. It was definitely cool to see. Because I seen him get the pick. I was like, whoa, that's a big fella. Why is he playing coverage? But hey, my man got the pick, so why not?
Oh, that's awesome. Minor setback for a major comeback. I got Blake Corum. I was very excited to see him in week 18 get a heavy load. And then, of course, like end of the first quarter, early second quarter, somewhere in that time, guy makes a nice catch along the sideline, pile drives somebody out of bounds, lands kind of funky. Breaks his forearm, right?
Dang,
so he's out for the playoffs. A little bit of a biased take from me, I think, given my fandom and my love for Blake Corum, but I think he has an incredibly bright future. He struggled to find a real role in the Rams offense this year behind Kyren Williams, who, you know, was really starred. But he started coming on in the last 5 to 6 games, getting more carries. He's getting closer to like 10 touches a game. Set to have that heavy workload in week 18, of course, and then just didn't really get to have it because of the injury happening so early. Yeah. I do expect him to be a big time ball player though, moving forward for the Rams. I would imagine he's a greater part of the offense in 2025, and beyond. He's probably a luxury that allows them to not have to overpay Kyren Williams to keep him. Truthfully,
that's true.
Not to say that I don't want to keep Kyren Williams, because I do, and I want them to pay him
similar,
fair price. But if he's asking for like Saquon money, hey, we can move forward with Blake Corum. You know what I mean? Yeah. Little under that, okay. You know, let's roll with both these dudes.
Dual threat.
And I think that's just part of team management and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And knock on Kyren. Kyren had an incredible year, and I want to see him in horns for the rest of his career, truthfully. But I'd also love to see the same of Blake Corum. So, minor setback, major comeback for Blake Corum there. The no cap hats off award. The Bears pulled the old, hey, this returner is going to fake the catch on one side. And the blocker's going to peel off and catch the ball in the other, takes the whole coverage team over here, and instead the returner's got the ball over there and returning it up the sideline 94 yards for a touchdown and a big win to finish off the year. Green Bay. They finally got off the schneid heading into 2025. Good for the Bears. Good for their fans. I know it may be major draft pick worse, whatever. Who cares?
Yeah.
Like, you guys needed that win. You beat your rival. You beat the Packers. Kept them from being able to get maybe into the sixth seed. Like, all of it's good. And that play, it's kind of an oldie but goodie. Like, teams have kind of been pulling that off. Every so often, it feels like maybe once every two seasons, someone pulls that off, and it's fantastic every time because it's just it on the screen too, because you can't track the ball if it goes out of the screen. So you're kind of watching, and you're like,
your head's just running.
it's fantastic to watch. It's a fun
play. I got an honorable mention for you on this too. In the Broncos game, our guy Bo Nix threw it to the back of the end zone. It bounced off our guy's hand. I think the defender tipped it up. Another defender came in, tipped it up. And then our guy Vele came out of nowhere, dove, caught it, got the toe tap in, and then fell out of bounds. And everyone was like,
it was just the Broncos' day. It was just their day.
Yeah, no, true. Carson Wentz looked sad out there, too.
Not like he did for the Rams in Week 18 last year. Or, matter of fact, Jimmy G this year had a good game. The Strahan Munoz Big Fellow Award. Jody, who you got?
This week I'm rolling Garrett Bowles for the Broncos. Plays left tackle. See, in the pass pro. So I'm pretty sure this dude's a big, big time,
he's blindside big. He's dude massive.
with them being on the pass pro. I had a play where they were doing like a tush push, and I'm pretty sure he came out the game. So I was like, yeah, they definitely used him more so in that passing front than rushing. But his kick step was nice and deep. Very fluid movement when he was in the pass pro. He, in the run game, like, he's not really pulling. You know what I mean? He'll crash down, but like, he did let up like three and a half tackles, I think, on the day. One of them wasn't his fault. Like, the dude ran to his back, and the defender just like reached over and grabbed his jersey. But like, regardless, definitely big in the passing front. And then early on in the game, I feel like he could have had a legal man downfield. They ran a screen, and my dude was like at the backer. I was like, whoa, take it easy. But it was fun to watch. It was definitely, like I said, big time presence in the pass pro and being on the blind side. So Garrett Bowles is my man this week.
My guy, Trey Hendrickson. Dude locked up the sack title with the playoffs on the line, bro. 3.5 sacks in one game is otherworldly. And he also had essentially the game-winning sack to keep the Bengals' playoff hopes alive. I know they didn't make it, but he had a great year. He was the one positive bright spot on an otherwise hapless Bengals defense. And he came in clutch. It felt like every time they needed him down the stretch in these last few games as they're trying to get to the playoffs. Mm-hmm. So shout out to Trey Hendrickson. Great year for him. I believe he was an all-pro, and he certainly earned it. Tremendous, tremendous season from him.
You want to know something wild about the Bengals? You know how I predicted them to be like 11-6 or whatever, right, to start the year?
I did
a mid-season like breakdown, and I had them 9-8 in the playoffs, which is kind of wild to think about. So it's tough that they missed out.
We got the Who's Cooking Award. As you know, this goes to our quarterback who is cooking, or maybe not so much, but they're in the kitchen, right? They're getting the opportunity, and whatever meal they cooked up, we'll grade.
You know,
are they prepping
a salad? You know, just put the lettuce here, throw some dressing on top, and sprinkle some bacon.
I got to shout out my guy, CB, all right, for this award.
Yeah.
You know, he came on this podcast last spring when we talked about the quarterbacks. You know, our kind of last quarterback that we discussed was a man by the name of Spencer Rattler, who he lovingly called a trash can.
Mm-hmm.
And generally, this season, when he got his opportunities,
it wasn't pretty.
His meals could have been thrown in the trash, the meals he was picking up in games. However, A couple games here that didn't look too bad. Specifically, Week 18 Sunday against the Buccaneers, the division-winning playoff-bound Buccaneers, no less.
Yeah.
Spencer Rattler, 26 for 42, 240 yards, and a touchdown. And he looked like a professional. I mean, he had the Saints in the lead for most of the game. He even kind of came close to leading him on a game-tying drive at the end. Just couldn't quite get it done. It was a good game for him. I think you could definitely make a case that Spencer Rattler has a career in the NFL, at least as your primary backup, if not as, you know, a guy who you – I don't think he's necessarily a guy you look at the face of your franchise, but he's going to be a backup quarterback in the league for a long time. He's proved it this year with some of the stuff he did. He's not a trash can. So, CB, you gotta let that take go, bro. Let it go.
Is he a recycling bin? Is that an upgrade for him? Is that
He's an NFL quarterback, dude. Like, get, put some organic respect on the man's name. Put some respect on his name.
All right, my guy this week, I went with Bryce Young and the upset that came down in the wire, a.k.a. OT. My boy was slicing and dicing. He put up 5 total touchdowns, 3 of those passing, 2 rushing. He finished the day with 25 34, 251 passing yards, and then 5 rushes for 24 yards. It was big to see, you know, it kind of a nice cap to the end of his season, right? You know, being benched early on, came back, was performing, and then struggled again a little bit, and then finished on a high note, keep it rolling through next year for sure. Because I think going forward, they're going to be something to mess with down there in the NFC South. So we'll see how their season kicks off next year.
It's really exciting to see the guy that we evaluated coming out of Alabama, who I compared to miniature Patrick Mahomes. So, you know, for me personally, and the take there, the analysis, feeling good that this is starting to show up as we saw it at Alabama. But also just I think Bryce Young is an extremely likable guy. You watch him play and it's like the guy feels like someone who lost his confidence completely and has regained it and is just having fun, just slinging the rock, playing carefree. Mm-hmm. Like, that game was the first time in the NFL, in his NFL career, that I looked at him and was like, oh, that's the kid you watched at Alabama that just played carefree and made plays and let it rip. And he was doing that. You know, he still has his deficiencies, but I think the marriage with Dave Canales is going to work long term. I think he's going to have an opportunity to have a really good career now, which is not something you probably would have said in like week 4 this year.
That's for sure. So last up on these awards that we got for you guys, we got the Boo Boo Evans Award. So this one, I almost thought about doing a dual one with George Pickens. He had similar stat line to this guy I'm going to mention. But
yeah, Pickens was rough. This was also rough for your guy here.
I was going to say, it was a sad, sad day in the old Skull Town. Our guy was looking like the bottom of a chalk can, just all scattered bits and pieces. No juice left, you know what I mean? This guy's dad even came out saying, hey, I'm going to need you to do push-ups on that fly home after getting demolished by the Lions Monday night. I'm rolling Jordan Addison here. He finished 1 catch on 6 targets, no yards. Just a rough, rough night for him. And there was even that clip rolling around about our guy Sam Darnold just skipping on him in the end zone and then end up getting sacked or something. It was just all bad for them boys. So we'll see if it's going to be a good game this week, bounce back, or if it's going to be just more punishment.
We hope not.
Yeah, no, I agree.
wild card preview. This is why you came. We're done with the Week 18 awards. Great season, by the way, of awards. We will at some point, I think, give out our season 2nd and 2 podcast awards here. But we'll probably wait until that in between the playoffs time, or the in between championship and Super Bowl.
Yeah,
we'll hit it then.
The Pro Bowl week.
Mm-hmm. So what we got to do now, though, and probably the reason all of you came to listen, and if you've listened this long, we appreciate you because you're about to get a treat here. We're going to talk about the wild card weekend, Super Wild Card weekend. We're going to preview every game. We're going to give you keys for both teams, Jody's best bet, a film clip to help you understand where our heads are at in these games, and then ultimately a final score prediction for every game. So first up, the mid-afternoon game today, you've got the Chargers at the Texans. All right. So the key for the Chargers, in my mind, you have to pressure CJ Stroud in unique ways, right? Mm-hmm. His career passer rating drops by nearly 20 points when he's under pressure. He also ranks 33rd of 36 eligible quarterbacks this season versus zone coverage. Okay. So what does Jesse Bear like to do? What does Jesse Minter like to do? He likes to bring five-man pressures and play fire zones behind it. That's exactly what the recipe is, in my mind, for beating C.J. Stroud. He's as creative as they come at bringing blitzers from different angles and still playing zone behind it, which is not a good thing for C.J. and Houston, because that's the combination of the two things that have confused C.J. Stroud this year, right? Is pressure in his face, forcing him to think quick, but then playing a fire zone behind it, and now he's got to find the spots. I think the other thing that contributes to this is you really have one legit receiver right now, Nico Collins, and your other two guys who were supposed to be there, Tank Dell and Stephon Diggs, have season-ending injuries. Now, this is not to say John Mechie and Robert Woods aren't professionals and can't get the job done. They just aren't those other dudes who had those injuries, right? Dalton Schultz is going to need to be big for them in this game, given the fact that the Chargers are going to bring these pressures, right? So the key for Houston, you have to, you know, combat what the Chargers are going to be able to do. So you got to be able to run the ball, protect Stroud. If the Chargers have a defensive weakness, it has been allowing their opponents to average 4.7 yards per rush, which ranks 27th in the NFL. Joe Mixon has been awesome this season when he's healthy. He had over 100 or over 1,000 rushing yards and 11 touchdowns, and he didn't even play the whole season. He missed some games. He is key to keeping the Texans on schedule, helping their O-line and pass pro, and helping C.J. Stroud be able to run some play-action pass, some boots, some sprint out to get away from the pressure and keep him out of true drop-back pass situations, right? I think the drop-back pass situations in this game are going to favor the Chargers' defense, not the Texans' offense. This is where the Chargers can create turnovers. This is where they can pressure Stroud, get sacks, all of that good stuff. So for the Texans, I think defensively they'll be okay. I don't think this is going to be a high-scoring game. I think the Texans' defense is very good and capable, and D'Amico Ryans will have those boys ready to ball. I think for the Texans, it's about staying on schedule on offense, being able to run the ball, being able to protect CJ. With that being said, you know, you look at, I'll give you a little film here, and we're going to go back to week, let's see, 15, week 15, right? So this is the Chargers playing against the Texans. This is the Charger or the Chargers playing against the Broncos. I'm sorry, on Thursday Night Football in Week 15, right? And so
Texans there now.
So it's 3rd and 6. All right, Bo Nix, rookie quarterback, who sees 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 guys on the line of scrimmage right now, or 7 guys on the line of scrimmage right now, and he's going, okay, so what's happening? Because you have the corners pressed, right? And then you have safeties sitting about 8 yards depth. Okay, so you're like, okay, so I have 7 on the line of scrimmage, safeties there. Okay, so someone's going to drop out. This may be some kind of fire zone, right? And this is what Jesse Minter likes, okay? This is an example of we're going to bring 5 but play zone with 6 guys behind it. This is going to end up turning into a 4-under-2-deep fire zone, what in our defensive verbiage we would call hot coverage, right? You're going to bring 1, 2, 3 outside on the offensive left, and then 2 from the other side. And the 2 middle guys, including a defensive tackle, are going to drop out to play the hook drops. Your corners who were pressed kind of look like they might be in man. They're actually going to be a hard, hard cover 2, especially knowing that it's 3rd and 6. You want to take away this throw at the sticks right now. And then your safeties are your 2 half field players. They're going to end up playing the vertical by number 2, right? And especially, again, knowing it's 3rd and 6, They're gonna play a little bit tighter, right? They're playing this thing at 8 yards, all right? They know Bo Nix is looking at this and saying, okay, I have to get the ball out quick, right? I've got pressure coming. I'm going to have to get the ball out quickly. So those safeties kind of play, you can see they didn't get any depth. They're going to catch those number 2 receivers, right? You can see the Chargers droppers, the hook drop, which helped take away these throwing wing, right? These angles, right? This throwing window, okay? And then that corner gets outside release. Okay, I'm going to play it, right? Because if it's both verticals, we each got to take the vertical, right? I can't just stay in the flat and give that up, of course. So it's like a read two, right? And they end up throwing a ball right at the sticks at the corner who's just playing essentially a hard cover 2 look, right? And it forces the incompletion, okay? So again, they show this front. Bo Nix is getting, okay, we got to get our protection right. The ball's going to have to come out hot. My back is going to step up protection. We're going to have 6 blockers for 5 rushers. but we only have four in the route versus six in coverage, right? Versus that fire zone. And he tries to get it out. Chargers defender makes a good play. This is what the Chargers defense forces you into, right? These are the kind of looks that Jesse Minner creates. And that's not even, you know, one of his more creative ones. He has more stuff that he does in the bag. Like I said, he's always finding ways to bring blitzers from different angles. He's a master of that. He was at Michigan. He has been in the NFL. And it's, you know, it's going to be a difficult day for CJ if they end up in those situations too much.
I am surprised, I guess. No, you're not surprised. That's probably not the word I'm looking for. But the fact that you showed the Broncos is what I'm trying to get at. It's kind of funny because I was going to say they're kind of reminiscent of them to me, where they kind of throw the deep ball and everything in between, kind of just like, if it works, it works. If not, it's like, well, we're going to throw the Hail Mary and that's going to be our way down the field. So the fact that that was a play from them is kind of funny to me. But my bet for this game is I'm just taking the Chargers -3. I think they take it from Houston. Houston hasn't been playing, you know, good cohesive ball down the stretch, and it's been up and down all around. And I think the Chargers are definitely, especially with Harbaugh in the building, like they're going to have that mentality to go in, step on people's throats, and like play nitty gritty ball down the wire. And I don't know. I don't think Houston's going to be prepared for that. And with CJ Stroud not being all too well either, it's like they're going to be able to, like you, how you mentioned with the defense, they're going to just be able to play games with them, and it's going to force him to make the right move. And I don't know if we've seen him do enough of that all year.
I do, if I had a worry in this game, I do worry that everyone is on the Chargers. I mean, I haven't heard a single analyst or person that's not like a Houston fan pick Houston all week. So if I had a worry, it's like that, hey, nobody believes in us. Everyone's on the other team, especially as a home dog already.
Yeah.
And truthfully, we saw Houston in this exact situation last year. The Browns were a very popular pick in the wild card, and Houston won that game. So if I had a worry, that's what it is. I also don't think the Chargers, I know they've played their three or four most like productive offensive games going into this game, and Justin Herbert has been unleashed a little bit more. He's been healthier. All of that stuff is true. But Houston's defense is the reason they made the playoffs, and that defense is legit. And D'Amico Ryans is good, and that secondary is legit, and that pass rush is legit. If they can stop the run from the Chargers, which the Chargers have not been as effective on the ground recently.
They got Zeke, though.
Get out of here. If they can stop the run, I don't think the Chargers are going to have like a ton of explosive success on offense. So that means the game's going to be close. So I will say, I think too many people are counting Houston out in this game. Although my prediction would lend itself to the Chargers -3 as well. I've got Chargers 20, Texans 13. Again, I think it's going to be a struggle to reach 20 points for both these teams in this game. Ultimately, I trust Harbaugh and Herbert more right now than I trust D'Amico Ryans and CJ Stroud, if that makes sense. I trust the infrastructure of a coach who's been to the Super Bowl, a coach who's won a national championship, and a quarterback who's playing probably the best ball of his career right now versus D'Amico Ryans is excellent. I don't want to make it sound like I'm talking down on him. He is excellent. He's what he's the reason I think they do have a chance in this game. But then CJ Stroud, who's not playing his best ball right now. So ultimately, that's why I picked the Chargers. All right.
Well,
next game tonight.
The line has shifted to 2.5. And if, I mean, that don't really mean much. You still need the 3, but
so you're still Chargers -2.5. Yeah. That's even better for you.
And then the total is at 41.5. So if you like that bet from TB, there's that as well.
I'm telling you, way under apparently. The game tonight: Steelers at Ravens, a divisional rematch, the rubber match, if you will, game 3 of a 1-1 series. The key for Pittsburgh, their offense just, they haven't shown up in recent weeks. Russ has to cook just enough. Okay. In the Steelers' 5 losses with him as the starter, he's thrown for an average of 193.6 yards. He's been under 200 yards. In their 6 wins, he's averaged 252.3 yards. So he's over 250. So in this, in their two games against the Ravens, he's been in between, right? He's thrown for 422 yards in those two games. So an average of 211 yards in those two games. So he's kind of in between good Russ versus bad Russ. And it's funny because they won one of those games and they lost one of those games, right? Yeah. So to me, Russ has to produce somewhere around 240, 250 passing yards in this game to keep their offense on schedule to keep them in the game, right? Mm-hmm. He also has two touchdowns versus two picks versus the Ravens this year. He's been sacked seven times. Yeah. He has to keep the Steelers on schedule on some third down plays. He's going to have to be a little bit creative. He's going to have to find Pickens. They got to get Pickens going. It can't just be Pat Freiermuth with a little bit of Calvin Austin. Like, Pickens has to be a factor. And he's going to have to, with that being said, I think he needs to complete one or two moon balls, right, to get to that 250 mark. The Ravens' defensive weakness earlier in the season was their secondary. They've been much better recently. So I don't necessarily think it's as big of a weakness now. However, it was early in the season, and if you got a shot, that's where you got to attack them. And that's the opportunity that the Steelers have. On the flip side, for Baltimore, they got to stay ahead of the chains. This Pittsburgh defense is very good. You don't want to be in second and third, second or third down pass against this defense. TJ Watt, Keanu Benton, Cam Hayward, Alex Highsmith, Peyton Wilson, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, right? Those dudes rushing the passer with JPJ and Minkah Fitzpatrick ball hawking in the secondary is not fun for any offense. Even the Ravens, who I think are the closest thing to the most unstoppable offense in football right now, could lead to turnovers, which feels like the only way Pittsburgh can win this game. Now, it's worth noting in both games, right? I know the last game, it finished 34-17, wasn't a great look for Pittsburgh, but that game was competitive, and it wasn't until Russell Wilson threw a pick six that it kind of flipped the whole game, right? By the same token, that Russell Wilson pick six happened directly after what we're about to show, which is what happens when you can get yourself in passing situations versus this Steelers defense. Now, this was a first and 10 type of situation, right? Not true pass, but regardless, the example of what can happen when you put yourself in those situations is shown here. So Baltimore, they're going to get in pistol, which they love, right? Derrick Henry. They're going to give you a little fake split zone action, leak Tyrone Wallace to the flat. They've got Rashad Bateman on the under, and they've got Zay Flowers on the dig. So it's a nice little high-low concept with your offshoot to the flat. Now, look, for Lamar right now, if you notice, he gets a little bit of pressure. The pocket moves a little bit, and he kind of steps away from this. So instead of hitting the check down to the flat right now, he's trying to throw this ball into the middle of the field to Rashad Bateman, and he thinks Bateman is going to sit on the hash and settle because it's zone. Don't keep running into defenders. Sit yourself down. Right, we'll try and split it and see if we can get in the end zone, okay? Because Minkah Fitzpatrick is kind of in that dig window. Okay, that tells me to throw the under. I've got it right now. And because the progression is dig, under, flat, that's why he's trying to throw the under and not the flat route right now, because in this case, the under is open. The problem is, or I should say that he thought Bateman was going to keep running. Bateman set it down. He thought Bateman was going to keep running. He throws it to the spot he thinks he's running to. And of course, he stops, and look who ends up getting the pick, but Minkah Fitzpatrick. And that all happens because of the slight backwards movement away from the throw with a little bit of pressure in Jackson's face and then the miscommunication between him and the receiver, right? And from this angle, you can see that movement a little bit better. Instead of stepping up into this throw, watch what has to happen when Patrick Queen gets this pressure. He steps away, right? And he's trying to throw that sidearm kind of fadeaway jumper, and that's how you end up with an interception. If the Steelers are going to have a chance in this game, one or two of those plays needs to happen for them, and Russell Wilson has to play at the level that he played at early in his tenure with the Steelers, where they're winning games and he's throwing for 250 yards. Because you're not going to run the ball efficiently against this defense in Baltimore. And Baltimore, if they can get a lead, they're going to grind you with Derrick Henry. They're going to grind you. And Baltimore doesn't have Zay Flowers, right? Yeah. So they don't have one of those receiving weapons. I do think that gives the Steelers a sliver of a chance. And we saw them play two competitive games, whether it was week 11 or week 16, or yeah, week 11, I think, or week 16. But Jody, what is your best bet for this game?
I was going to say real briefly before I give that out, I was going to say that means we got to expect some big things out of the tight ends, either Mark Andrews or Isaiah Likely, if they're missing that Isaiah Flowers on the outside. So we'll see what happens in that front. But my bet, when you give out your prediction, you'll see. But I guess Vegas is on the money with this one, is what I'm saying. I'm taking the under 43.5, but if you really want to, you could buy up the half a point, get to 44, and then take that under with that, which I ended up doing. And I all these picks I'm giving out, I parlayed all of them, and I did that on that one. So I think it, like you said, it's going to come down to just them playing each other way too often to not know what's going to happen in this game. And it's going to be nitty gritty, like you said. The Ravens are going to be running the ball a lot, I'm assuming. And then, like Russ, like you said, has to do enough to win, where they still do Jaylen Warren and Najee Harris in the backfield. So they run the ball a decent amount as well. I just think we're going to see slow pace, a bunch of good football where people are like, there's no point, but like a lot of just a chess match, classic chess match. So,
I mean, I think divisional playoff matchups are always tough. You know, it's round three.
Yeah.
I think specifically Ravens Steelers, you just never know what could happen. Like, to me, the Ravens are my clear pick to come out of the AFC. And yet, if there was one team they probably didn't want to play in the wild card, it probably is the Steelers, just because Tomlin and that defense game plan Lamar so well. It's much harder now with Derrick Henry, obviously. We diagrammed that a couple weeks ago, right? However, I think the Steelers defense, Mike Tomlin, that experience, they have the goods to keep this thing close. I don't think they're going to stop the Ravens by any means, but I think they're going to slow them down. I think they're going to be in the game. I think Russ will play better than he has recently, well enough to put them in a position to win the game. I still like the Ravens. I think this is kind of their year. Shout out to my uncle. I know he was kind of going back and forth with me when I was talking to him about the Ravens a couple weeks ago, or the Steelers, I should say. And I said, hey, they needed to win that week 18 game to get the 5 seed and go to Houston and avoid Baltimore. Yeah. He is like, I want Baltimore. I'm like, you're crazy. I do think I think Pittsburgh is better than what they've been down this stretch. I don't think they're maybe as good as they were earlier in the season, but I don't think they're as bad as they have been. I think they're somewhere in between. And I think we see that manifestation in this game. Truthfully, I still like Baltimore. So I've got Baltimore 24, Pittsburgh 20. Again, I think I said this in the playoff picks, the CFP picks, but playoffs. I don't look at lines, I don't look at spreads, I don't look at over unders when I make these projections. Yeah. So the fact that, you know, hey, Vegas is good, because I hit it right at 44 points total, right? So if it's 43.5, I guess I'm telling you to take the over by a half point. But yeah, I've got Baltimore 24, Pittsburgh 20.
That's what I said. Just buy the extra half a point, and then you cover both of us.
All right, we're going Broncos at Bills Sunday morning. For Denver, their defense is going to have to win third down situations. Josh Allen is a killer and has been all season long. The Bills rank 7th in third down conversion rate, and Josh Allen has a passer rating of 98.2 on third down. On third down alone, he has 943 passing yards, 10 touchdowns, and only 2 picks all season. No play is ever dead with him on those and those conversions usually lead to points. We saw it in so many games. Like that Rams-Lions games back-to-back, he showed that ability so often to extend that play. It's never dead. He can make the throw you think he can't make. Denver needs to hold Buffalo to somewhere around 33% on third down, to have a shot in this game, because that will keep their points lower, give their offense a shot, keep Buffalo off the field, not allow them to extend drives. That will generally lead to points. For Buffalo, they have to stop the run game for Denver. Buffalo loves to live in nickel, which exposes them to the run game. Generally, though, other teams have been losing so much for most of the games against Buffalo that they can't expose that, right? So, like, the numbers, the counting stats don't look that bad against Buffalo. Yeah. But truthfully, they give up 4.5 yards per carry in the run game. Ooh. It's just that teams can't stick to it long enough because they're always in these game scripts where they're down. Yeah. So Denver, again, if they can get off the field early on third downs and keep their offense in and give their offense a shot to run the ball, Denver likes to get big in some personnel packages. Sean Payton is not afraid of 12 and 21 personnel, and they could just run the ball. They can even add Bo Nix at the quarterback to the run game as well and add a number, and that will give them an opportunity, I think, to be productive against this Bills defense. Mm-hmm. If Buffalo, though, can stop the run and put Denver in passing situations, Bo Nix will make mistakes. He'll throw it up, and there'll be some amazing plays. He'll also make some mistakes. I think that variance lends itself to Buffalo, given who they have at quarterback versus who Denver has, right? So if you're Buffalo, you want this to be a drop back pass game both ways. That's your way to winning the game. Yeah, and if you're Denver, you're saying get stops on third down, be able to run the football, be productive running the ball, and then let Bo Nix make winning plays when you need them, not for the entirety of the game. Yeah. With that being said, you know, we want to talk about Josh Allen being freaking Superman on third down and no play ever being dead. We'll go back to no longer than week 14, Rams, Bills. This is a game the Bills lost, but this is a 3rd-and-9 play that it felt like the Rams, hey, they're going to get off the field here, right? So you watch, he's got Amari Cooper up top, 3rd-and-9 from their own 21. The Rams have a ton of momentum here. The Bills can't afford not to, kind of match with the way the Rams offense have been playing. And again, Allen in the pocket, the Rams bring four. They do it a little bit creatively, and they're playing quarters coverage behind it, right? And because Allen looks at Kincaid, see how he pulls this safety, thinking, oh, it's going to be a throw to this hash. Yeah. Psych. I'm going to make that one-on-one, fade ball throw over here, and it's going to be layered perfectly over the corner to Amari Cooper for him to make that catch. And now all of a sudden you go from 3rd-and-9 at your own 21 to near midfield, and it's all on the supreme play of Josh Allen. I'm going to hold this safety. Now when I see him make that break, I'm going to turn. I know I've got Amari Cooper one-on-one. He's going to go make that play for me. Boom. The combination of Amari Cooper and Keon Coleman have also been excellent for Josh Allen because, when he is extending those plays and he wants to make those throws vertically down the field, those guys can go get that play, can go make that play for him. And then Allen, obviously, in the run game, like that, they won that Chiefs game earlier in the year on Allen being a superhero. So there's just no play that's ever dead with Josh Allen. And I think the Broncos have an excellent defense. This is a tall task. Getting him off the field on third down, they're going to have to do it. And seeing plays like that from Josh Allen make you believe, I don't know if they can, right?
Yeah.
But what's your best bet for this game?
Well, I might be willing to take both of these now after what you just told me. Because originally, this is what I wrote down word for word. It says, I like the Broncos +8.5 unless it's snowing. Quick check on the phone. What's the weather in Buffalo? Well, it's snowing every other day besides Sunday, so it's going to be cold. I'm going with the under 48. But if it's cold and they let up 4.5 yards to carry, the 8.5 don't look too bad either way. Because that's kind of playing out how I think it's going to go. Now, my train of thought to the 8.5 was they're going to throw the ball deep. They're going to score at some point in time. That's the way that they play. They're big on the deep shot every time, and so that's their way of getting down the field. And then I said, well, if it's snowing, they're not gonna be able to throw the ball, right? But I think it kind of plays out even better. So I took the under in my parlay when I took all these together, but the 8.5 don't sound too bad still now with that stat being in my head. So
I think Denver could keep it close, at least for a half or so, for put themselves within kind of that 1-2 score range. But I feel like Buffalo is going to control this game. Josh Allen, again, is just superhuman. If it's snowing, guess what you're going to see? A ton of Josh Allen in the run game.
Yeah.
Which definitely. Asked the Niners how that went for them when they had to go play in Buffalo in the snow, you know, in the middle of the year. And that was not a fun game for them. So I think it's just ultimately the Denver season has been fantastic. I think Sean Payton deserves a ton of credit for what he's done with Bo Nix. I think Vance Joseph deserves a ton of credit for making that defense as good as it's been. Pat Surtain may even be the defensive player of the year, but I just think Buffalo's too good in this case. And I've got Buffalo 27, Denver 17. I think Denver will struggle to score a little bit. And I think Buffalo will play well enough that they will. So I think Denver keeps it within a score for most of the game. And then Buffalo kind of, you know, maybe scores a touchdown at the end to kind of put this thing out of reach. But based on that, I like what you're saying with the under. So,
yeah, we're definitely in line on that there. It's going to be interesting to watch because I'll be able to actually get to watch that one. I'll miss the ones from today due to work, but tomorrow we're back at it.
Work. Okay. Sunday afternoon, Packers at Eagles. We get to the NFC side of things. I think it's interesting this year. We got all the AFC games and then all the NFC games. It's kind of fun.
No. Two things. I wanted to mention them when we brought up the schedule at the top, but I'm glad to see Fox finally getting an NFC-NFC game because all year I felt like they had a NFC-AFC matchup. It just didn't feel right to me. I don't know. And then the other one was I didn't know NBC still put on the game at night. I don't know if it's because they don't have it on Hulu or what, but I would always just go to Peacock to watch the games because I was like, I thought that's where they were exclusively on Peacock every Sunday night, but I didn't know.
Last year they did a game that was only on Peacock, but this year the Amazon game kind of replaced that, I think. Like CBS gets two games, right? They get the first game today, and then the night game is Amazon, and then CBS gets the morning game tomorrow, and then it's Fox, NBC, ESPN. So it's interesting, you know, like I said, I think the deal is CBS or Fox could end up with two games depending on which game NBC picks. For the night game. So it's kind of like CBS either gets two AFC games. AFC. Yeah, it just depends on who the ESPN, NBC, Amazon games. Yeah. So all right. Packers at Eagles. The key for Green Bay. You gotta start fast and get a lead in my mind. They gotta get the lead first. If they can get a lead early, it'll let them run the football and also maybe negate some of the Philly rushing attack at the same time, right? I think these teams want to play the same way. Run the ball, be efficient in the rhythm passing game or even the RPO game, get after the passer and trust their secondary. The only way you do all of those things is if you're comfortably in that lead, right? Or at least definitely. In the game, right? Like down by 3 points, up by 3 points, tied. Up by two scores, what it has to be. Once you get down two scores, you can't play that way anymore, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's why it's important for, especially Green Bay being the road team here, to get that lead early, and then they can play the game their way. If they have to play it another way, it's going to be difficult for them to win this game. So I think it's imperative. Mm-hmm. Like if I'm LaFleur, if we win the toss, we're taking the ball. I want to take the ball and I want to get up and score right away. Right. That's strategy number one is we got to get on the scoreboard first so we can play the game our way. Because you go back, they played week one in Brazil, completely different teams atmosphere. At that point. I mean, Billy defensively has evolved so much since that point. Green Bay is relatively similar, but I do think Green Bay leans on their run game a little more than they did in that game. Yeah. And we'll have to this time against Philly, especially considering how much better the Philly secondary is, right? But in that game, Green Bay did get up 6-0 first, right? So, and it allowed them to play a really tight game down to the wire. Philadelphia, I think their key is Jalen Hurts playing his best ball. You know, we mentioned earlier kind of the news that he cleared the concussion protocol, right? I kind of feel like, yes, it's great he's playing, of course, but he was in concussion protocol for like 3 weeks. He hasn't played football since week 15. I really played. I guess he played a little bit in week 16 when he got the concussion, right? But really hasn't played since week 15. We saw him struggle against the Panthers team in week 14 and then look good in week 15 against the Steelers. But which version of Jalen Hurts are you getting, right? It's going to be imperative for the Eagles to get that week 15 version. And you can't, there's no time to be rusty. There's no time to be out of rhythm here. He's got to go. He's got to be great. And he barely practiced this week because he was still in that concussion protocol. Yeah. The starters for the Eagles haven't played in, like, again, 2 weeks because they didn't play against New York. And they had a really early day against Dallas the week before because they're blowing them out by so many points. Mm-hmm. I wonder about the health and rhythm of this Eagles offense against a Packers defense that thrives off creating turnovers. And if you're out of rhythm, that can cause turnovers, right? So I do think that puts this game in a little bit of jeopardy more. So it's funny because I ranked the Eagles as the team that, you know, the number one team in the NFC when we did our power rankings a week ago, right? I was pretty much in on this Eagles team, but now I'm looking at it and I'm like, I don't know if I like this matchup they got with Green Bay. I know most people are on Philly.
A little testament to what you were saying. If the Packers get out and score a lot in the first quarter, they're ranked like top four or top five. Mm-hmm. I'll say top five. I think they're number four in first quarter scoring. The Eagles struggle. And it was like 108 points for the Packers and like 65 on the year for the Eagles.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's key. It's critical.
Not just that, though. It's like there was another stat that had to deal with. Oh, the Eagles, I think in general, had like 10 games or something where they didn't score anything in the first quarter. So if the Packers mm-hmm. come out and get two quick ones, it's like, oof, it's already out of hand. So that's another little bet you could take if you really wanted. It was Packers to be up in the first quarter.
I agree. I like that because I do think it could take Hurts and the offense some time to get on the same page. And again, if Green Bay can get out to that lead, they can play the game their way at that point. So this goes back to that week one game in Brazil. They've got Philly backed up in a third and long, right? So now it allows them to get wide with their pass rushers in threes and fives. They're going to play quarters coverage and kind of show press up here, but they're playing quarters, right? And Philly is going to keep guys in protection because they're kind of expecting, you know, Jeff Hafley to bring pressures, you know, be more creative. So they keep these backs mostly in the protection. They're going to check release guys, right? But they only have three on the route, and it's a vertical with a comeback and a vertical on the other side. Now watch, this is Xavier McKinney. This play he makes is why at midseason I was talking about him as defensive player of the year, okay? So you get the outside release, the corner's showing press, but playing quarters, right? McKinney is dropping that way, okay? You get the comeback against the corner over here right at the sticks who plays it well. And then you get the middle seam versus a quarters or cover two look like this. And you get this middle seam with the backer kind of running the pipe and trying to run with that receiver. That should be a really good look for them. Should be a great look. And I believe that's Devontae Smith, if I remember right. Xavier McKinney from the opposite numbers fly to that hash to make that play. Phenomenal play by him. And again, it's why he was in the conversation for defensive player of the year midway through the year. Production kind of tallied off towards the end of the season, but doesn't take anything away from like what this guy is capable of. And these are the kind of situations, like, this is not necessarily a bad decision in my mind from Hurts. It's just an incredible play from McKinney. Yeah. And if the Packers can create that kind of turnover again early in the game, because this was early in that game, right? And it led to, the problem was the Packers came out, kicked a field goal. They got the Eagles backed up. The Eagles throw this pick. They don't capitalize and make that a touchdown. So they only go up 6-0, and it kept the Eagles kind of in the game. If that changes and you can score a touchdown there, that game, it looks completely different. That's the kind of game script the Packers need. They need the game script to be that way if they're going to win this game. I don't see the Packers like having a come from behind victory in this game because Saquon is too good. They have to find ways to take Saquon out of the game and also allow them to utilize Josh Jacobs to his fullest extent if they want to win. That's their most dangerous offensive player. And then it allows Jordan Love to play on script and not play with pressure and not, you know what I mean? all of that stuff is going to be really important for Green Bay in my mind. So that is huge. What is your best bet for this game, Jody?
All right. So like I said, this is where the Hurts news kind of hurts me. But I said that the Packers plus 5.5, I've yet to hear news of Hurts. So rip the season. And I was like, well, then if you really want, you can take the money line for value. Of course, we heard that Jalen Hurts is going to be back. But like you said, I think it's been 2 weeks now. He's been on the protocol. So it's like hasn't been doing much in terms of working out in general. Movement, I don't even know. If it's that bad, this dude is probably walking around with sunglasses on all day, like kind of just like moping. I mean,
he was in protocol for like, I think it was like 18 days.
Exactly. So, that's a long time, especially to being the man up front. Got to conduct all the calls and everything. Like, I'm sure you can get your cerebro up in the office, but like not being able to go out and like execute, that's a little different. Mm-hmm. And then... they don't have Devontae Smith, right? He's hurt. Am I wrong on that?
I had not heard that he was like missing the game. I know he hasn't been like 100%, but he got to rest in week 18 and everything like that. I think he'll be good.
All right. Well, never mind there. But regardless, like I said, I'm taking the Packers with the points. If not, if you really think they're going to win, take the money line because that is sitting at plus 195. So you almost get double your money for whatever you put in. So that's cool.
I mean, I will say this, you know, it's not necessarily fair for us to mention all these Eagles injuries and this stuff without talking about the Packers. Like, yeah, Jordan Love is banged up. They're missing Christian Watson and they're not going to have Jaire Alexander. Those are three of arguably their four, five best players on that team. So it's not fair necessarily to say that the Packers aren't also banged up and that Philly is the favorite in this game for a reason. Philly should win the game. However, I don't know what it is. I think it's just the matchup. I think it's the Jalen Hurts not being 100% healthy. Again, if Hurts is healthy and everything is right, I like Philly to come out of the NFC. But if there's anything not quite right there, that flips everything for me. And I kind of think it's not right now. So I am actually, this is the first game that we've talked about so far where I'm going to go the other way. Relative to most people, I'm picking Green Bay to win this game 24-21. I think the Packers will get up early. The first quarter scoring totals, you know, we talked about that. And if they can get that lead, they can play the game their way. Josh Jacobs, you know, has an opportunity in that kind of game script to outperform Saquon Barkley. And if that happens, Green Bay wins in my mind. Like Saquon has to have a big game for Philly because of the Hurts and the passing game being maybe not where it could be. And also Green Bay is going to be really good when you get in those passing situations versus, you know, they're maybe not as good stopping the run. So I do think though Green Bay is going to get that lead. And I do think they're going to be able to play the way they want to play. And with that kind of game script, I think it favors Green Bay even in Philly. So I'm taking Green Bay 24-21. Okay. The NBC Sunday night game, Commanders at Bucks. Truthfully, the biggest toss-up of the weekend, if you ask me. it really is. I think it's going to be fun. I think this could be the most fun game. I think NBC's kind of – it was an underrated pick by NBC to pick this game as the game they wanted to show on Sunday Night Football because I think it could be the most fun.
Yeah.
So everybody loves points.
I agree with that.
This game should be the highest point total of the weekend in my mind. For Washington. That being said, you know, we're going to talk about both these teams' defenses because I don't really have a ton of questions about the offenses in this game. I think those teams are going to show up and do what they do. The defenses, though, for Washington, the key is get pressure on Baker Mayfield. The Saints showed that if you could stop the Bucs' run game early, get some pressure on Baker Mayfield early and often, it can halt a kind of a good Buc, you know, a really good Bucs offense, right? They held the Bucs to 6 first half points. They forced Baker into a sack and a pick. If Washington can create, you know, one turnover, that could be the difference that determines this game because I don't think either defense is going to get a ton of stops. In week one, these two teams played. It's fun. In the NFC, it's a bunch of rematches. It's all rematches, but from much earlier in the season, obviously. Yeah. So two of them, we talked about Green Bay and Philly. Washington, Tampa was a week one game as well. In week one, they only sacked Baker one time and they allowed him to throw for 289 plus 4 tutties, right? Okay. Extremely productive day. Tampa won that game 37-20, right? So the Washington defense had not kind of found its stride. Bobby Wagner and Mike Stainerstell being a rookie and all the things that all the moving parts they have, Dan Quinn's new system. They're better now. Wouldn't tell you they're great, but they're better than they were in that week one game.
Yeah.
On the flip side, for Tampa, you got to make the Commanders one-dimensional. They have not ran the ball well outside of Jaden Daniels, really, all season. And he has performed. He's been sensational. But if he's still a rookie quarterback on the road in his first playoff start. And if the Bucs can take away any kind of run game and just put it all on Jaden Daniels in this one, it could give themselves an incredible shot to win it, right? In week one, they had 138 rushing yards, the Commanders did, while Daniels struggled in his first ever start. He's a completely different player now from what he was then. Cliff Kingsbury knows how to call plays for him. All of that stuff has changed. But if they can have that same success on the ground with this version of Daniels, I think that changes the game script for Washington, right?
Yeah,
so if you're Tampa, obviously, hey, we gotta keep Jaden Daniels in the pocket. We don't want to let him scramble. We got to stop the design run game, whatever, all that. But if Brian Robinson can have a game, he can have 100 yards rushing, and they can lean on that a little bit, I think Tampa's defense doesn't have a lot of answers at that point for stopping this team. So if the Commanders can take some of that success on the ground in week one and bring it with what Jaden Daniels and Terry McLaurin and that passing game, Zach Ertz, what those guys are now, I think the Commanders have a very good shot even on the road in Jaden Daniels' first start as a rookie. So we go to the clip. Week one, right? And this is, you know, we talked about one of the things that Washington needs to do is get pressure on Baker. This is the one instance, or, you know, where they were able to create a sack, but one instance in that game, this is a third down in the early third quarter on a three and out, what ended up being a three and out. Again, you get them in third and pass, you get in those wide techniques, right? Threes and fives, kind of leave the middle of the field open. You might walk a backer up, show pressure, simulate that pressure. Oh, wait, no, you actually are bringing it now, right? You can do and play all of those games. You trust your coverage maybe a little bit more than you did then. It's not great, but Emmanuel Forbes isn't there anymore. Like, they've got some different guys. Yeah. Mike Sainer still is a very trustworthy cover guy at this point.
Yeah, Lattimore.
And you've got exactly Lattimore versus Mike Evans. Like, maybe there's something there for Washington where they can trust a little bit more. Okay. The Bucs bring Evans in short motion, right? He's getting man coverage. Okay. It's man coverage across the board. Cover one. They're going to bring five. And like I said, they creep that backer into that A gap. Okay. They're bringing him. Well, now you force Baker to step up. Then he tries to escape out and they get the sack there to end that drive, which was a big play. Again, that's Frankie Louvu, who's an excellent blitzer. You definitely want that. Oh, there's Bobby Wagner. Boom. And actually, I was wrong. They brought six and the backside and protection. So that's how they had the one high. So you brought Louvu and Bobby Wagner, created that pressure. They get the sack on third and medium and force a fourth and long. That's, you know, that's the kind of game Washington's going to have to play on defense. They're going to have to take some chances. They're going to have to come after him. They're going to have to create pressure on Baker Mayfield. If Baker Mayfield's scrambling, that's okay, right? Like it's kind of the opposite of Jaden Daniels. If Jaden Daniels is scrambling and making big-time plays, if you're Tampa, you're like, this is not good for us. If you're Washington, though, it means he's not throwing to Baker Mayfield, or he's not throwing to Mike Evans, and he's not throwing down the field to Jalen McMillan and all those dudes. It's Bucky Irving's not getting the touches he needs to get. Like, if Baker Mayfield has 40 yards scrambling, great. That's probably Washington. That probably is a good feeling on their end, right? Yeah. Whereas if the other way for Tampa, that would not be great. So I think that's, if you're Washington, you're Dan Quinn, more pressures. Get more pressure on Baker Mayfield. Stop the run. Make them have to get into more drop back pass situations.
Yeah, for me on this game, I think, like you said, the defenses haven't been all too good for both sides. They've been better, like you said, have improved over time, but not necessarily like a top tier defense that we're used to seeing in other places than people that are in the playoffs. So I think this one just got a lot of points. Line was sitting at 50. I think that's really low, honestly. Seemed like a very obvious choice. Just, they're going to score a lot regardless of how they do it. And I think that it'll be a fun game to watch, and especially at the nighttime, just chilling at home, you know what I mean? Close out the night, back on Monday.
Nighttime in Florida, man. Not a bad place to be. I'm with you. I think over 50 is a lock, which means that both defense will show up and play excellent, right? So take this with a grain of salt, I guess. It just always seems to go that way. But in my mind, over 50, lock. I think, again, this is a coin flip game. I think offenses are going to score at will. I think it's going to be fun. It's going to go back and forth. I've got Washington 37, Tampa 30.
El Mary game?
I was going to say, I think it kind of, I imagine this game being 30-30 with the ball in Jaden Daniels' hands. And he's just every single time this year that Washington has needed that to happen, he has made it happen every time. Mm-hmm. And so I just imagine walk-off touchdown, like, you know, Washington wins that way.
Yeah.
That's just how I envision it. And it's Jaden Daniels just getting the job done, 37-30. But again, Tampa's got home field. They beat them by 17 points in week one. I just think Jaden Daniels has come such a long way since then. Washington is a much improved team since then. Tampa's very good. This is the hardest game of the weekend to pick in my mind. But yeah, I went Washington 37, Tampa 30.
Yeah, that's why I took the points. I was like, I don't want to have to figure out who I think is going to win. I'd rather just.
Yeah. Okay. Last but not least, the Monday night game, Vikings at Rams in Glendale, Arizona. First and foremost, Minnesota. Their key is they got to protect Sam Darnold. I mean, we saw it in the Lions game, right? He's been elite when you give him time to throw this season, and there's no other way to say it. When he's feeling pressure, maybe not as much, right? In the three games that Minnesota has lost, twice to Denver, once to the Rams, he's been sacked 9 times, including 3 times against the Rams back in October. Now, interestingly enough, Detroit has done it by bringing lots of blitzers and just trusting their dudes to hold up a man versus Jefferson and Addison.
Mm-hmm.
The Rams, that's not really their MO. They have been blitzing a little bit more since the bye, but truthfully, they like to bring four and play split safety coverages. Like Chris Shula comes from that Raheem Morris and Brandon Staley. Like, I'm not going to say tree. He's really off the McVay tree. He's been with McVay for all 8 years, but he's worked under Wade Phillips and Raheem Morris and Brandon Staley and all this. And they all kind of have that same MO of, you know, we're going to try and play more too high, more split safety. We're playing more zone. If we do bring a pressure, maybe it's a little bit more fire zone-y than it is man. The Rams have not lived in man this year like Detroit did. So I don't think the Rams are looking at that Detroit game and saying, we're going to replicate that kind of game plan. But I do think they can create pressure. I think that the message is create pressure on Darnold in different ways. Sometimes we got to win with four, and we trust Jared Verse, like who had a dominant game in week 8 against them, to do that. And sometimes it's, bring the extra guy, bring a Quentin Lake, bring Omar Spates, like bring that extra man to create the pressure, or even Cam Curl, who's an excellent blitzer from the safety spot, right? So, however, if Darnold gets time, he can dice up a Rams secondary that you could classify as shaky. There's personnel that's been changed up throughout the year. Darius Williams has been their best corner, but by no means is like excellent. He's a good player. Witherspoon has come on of late and played really well. Kobe Durant is still there. Josh Wallace is still there, right? The safeties are probably better than the corners with Quentin Lake and Cam Curl and Cam Kitchens. There's plenty of opportunities, what I'm saying. If the Vikings can keep him upright, they're going to have their opportunities to get points. By the flip side of that, for the Rams, I think the key is Matthew Stafford versus pressure on third down. We know Brian Flores is going to bring pressures. We know they're going to try and attack this Rams front. We know if you get pressure on Stafford, especially in third down situations, the Rams haven't been great. Now, what's interesting is the tandem of Stafford and Nacua rank as I think it's number one versus pressures since Nacua came back from injury. So there's and hopefully people understand the difference between being under pressure and the defense actually designing and sending a pressure. The Rams are great if you send a pressure and they pick it up. because it means Nacua and Stafford are getting a one-on-one and they will burn you in those situations. But if you bring the pressure and it gets home, the Rams are not good. Like Stafford and his age at this point, extending plays isn't exactly his forte, even though he can throw off platform and he can still kind of get around stuff and get out of stuff. We saw him do that against the Vikings for a touchdown in week 8. But it's not necessarily what, at this point, it's not what you want Stafford doing, right? So if the Rams can pick up those pressures, right, and Stafford and Nacua can be excellent versus that, then they can outperform what they've been. You know, they've been 24th best in the league in third down conversion rate this year, just 36.8%. They're going to have to be better in those situations to beat the Vikings in this game, or they got to keep themselves out of those situations, which means running the ball with Kyren Williams early and often. But, you know, I think the Rams have the goods to be excellent versus that. I mean, you know, you go back to that week 8 game and you find a situation where it is third and pass, right? And the Rams are looking at a front. Hey, this looks kind of similar to what the Chargers did to get to the Broncos, right? Kind of a similar deal. Okay. It's going to be in this case, though, the Vikings are going to want run a 3-under-3 deep instead of 4-under-2 deep, right? So you're going to get Cam Bynum getting to the middle of the field. The corners are going to play their thirds. You've got a flat defender here, or the safety is going to play a third. The flat defender is the corner. The corner is going to play the third over here. The safety who's on the line of scrimmage is going to play the flat. You're going to get a middle of the field player. And then you got a nickel who's playing essentially the mic right now is going to play your middle hook, right? So they're going to send 5, 3-under-3 deep fire zone. But the Rams, right, they're going to do their job and pick this up. They're going to pick up the pressure on third and medium. Kyren Williams is going to step up, right, and help protect. But look at that pocket right now.
Yeah.
Okay. It gives Stafford the ability to see that this is 3-under-3 deep zone. Okay. And now we can find Nacua on the comeback, which is essentially, and really it's more of a deep out. It's going to create the one-on-one versus Gilmore and get away from it, right? And what an excellent catch. I mean, incredible, right? But that's the kind of stuff that Stafford and Nacua can create when you do send pressure and it doesn't get home. And that's the difficult part, right? I mean, look at that play. Unbelievable catch. So that's the kind of stuff that the Rams can do, that they're capable of, that they will have to do in Arizona Monday night, because you know Brian Flores, you know his MO. He's going to bring that stuff. He's going to show and get out and bring it and simulate pressures, all of that stuff. The O-line's going to have to be excellent. Stafford's going to have to identify coverage and what's happening and get the ball to the right guy at the right time. And in that case, he did, which I think the Rams have an opportunity to do. Jody, what's your bet for this game?
So this one, I have another similar to the Packers. I got the spread, but if you want value, you take the money line. I took the Rams here at 2.5. I mean, if you really want to, you could buy it down to 3 if you feel like the field goal is better. And then, like I said, if you really want to get as much bang for your buck, you go the money line. That's sitting at plus 125, so like $1.25 to your money. But regardless, I think that the Rams win it. It just seems like, especially now with, like, you know, the story that they could bring with LA, you know, trying to rally behind something, I think that all that plays a factor. And so, I don't know. It just seems like the right pick. I couldn't give you an exact reason. Just all feeling. This is like the hardest.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you. And this might be, again, I might be on team bias here. I'm a Rams fan. I'm not going to hide it and pretend like it didn't factor into my decision making, but I think you're right. I think there's a story there with the fires. I think the Rams are playing for something greater than themselves. Mm-hmm. And in these kinds of situations, especially under McVay, they always seem to respond positively. They had a tough wild card loss last year in a similar sort of season, similar season script, getting to the playoffs after a terrible start, playing an excellent team in round one and just barely losing. Right. And in this case, they have what was home field. It technically still is, I guess, but it's just a little different situation. But I think,
neutral like site.
I said, that could be galvanizing for them rather than hurt them. Yeah. They've posted the interaction between Dan Campbell and Kevin O'Connell after that game in their locker room. It's been reported. See you in 2 weeks. That's on their locker room wall right now. They know that. They know that's the perception. They're underdogs in round one as a home playoff team.
Yeah.
They've beaten these Vikings in week eight. There's also the idea, I mean, the Vikings, you know, a lot of teams, there's that Lions hangover people have talked about all year. You play the Lions in the next week, whether you beat or win or lose to the Lions the next week, generally there's a struggle there. And that's kind of held true all through the season. Whether the team loses the next week or not, it does seem like they at the very least struggle. And I think that will hold true as well. Minnesota had to play a tough divisional game that they went all out for to try and win the division, a number one seed, and lost. Yeah. Meanwhile, the Rams were resting, getting healthy.
Very true.
And playing kind of a meaningless week 18 game with a lot of backups, right? So I think a lot of those things give the Rams an edge and an advantage. And I kind of think that Matthew Stafford and Cooper Kupp have one more run in them. Hey. So I'm going Rams 30, Vikings 28. I think by no means are the Vikings done or dead. And I do think this is an incredible game. Has the potential to be the best game of the entire weekend in terms of, I kind of think the Rams went on like a walk-off Josh Cardi field goal here.
Mm-hmm. I feel that.
So that means with you
like the over too. That's at 47.5. Let me double check. I just looked. Yeah, 47.5. So
and at 58. Yeah. So I do think both offenses are going to be able to score. I do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, similar like the Bills game, and just a ton of points.
I mean, maybe not 80 some points, but yeah, I think both these teams score in the high 20s, low 30s, somewhere in there. Yeah, I think that's what the kind of game you're getting. I think Stafford and Darnold will both show up and play well, but the defenses, you know, will get stops here and there when they need them, right? So, which is truthfully, it's a lot like the week 8 game they played. The Rams ended up winning that game 30-20. Their defense, the Rams defense pitched, not a shutout in the second half, but they didn't let the Vikings score a touchdown in the second half, which was huge, obviously. I don't know if they'll quite be able to replicate that kind of performance. Obviously, I think the Vikings score a little more points here, but I think the Rams score same neighborhood, 30 points, right? Yeah. So I think great game there. So to wrap it all up, basically we like all the favorites in the AFC, Broncos, Ravens, Chargers. We like all the underdogs in the NFC, Packers, Commanders, Rams. Take that for what you will. I do think the NFC is more wide open than the AFC. The AFC feels like it's going to come down to one of three teams, Chiefs, Bills, Ravens. One of those top three seeds is coming out. Whereas the NFC, I know people love the Eagles and the Lions, and there even is some love for the Vikings. I think the NFC is wide open. I think anybody could win the NFC. I think the Packers could still win the NFC. I think the Commanders could make that run with Jayden Daniels. The Vikings, the Rams. I guess the only team that I wouldn't like, you know, that I would be surprised if they came out of the NFC would maybe be the Bucks. Even the Bucks, if they could win this game, they could go on the road and beat Philly if that's what that's it was, true. Right? And they could end up in the NFC championship. So like, I would be surprised if they came out of the NFC, but basically every other NFC team, I wouldn't be surprised if we saw that team representing the NFC in the Super Bowl, whereas the AFC feels like it's a race between three teams. So sort of makes sense that we're taking favorites in the AFC and underdogs in the NFC. So we'll see. It should be a great wild card weekend. And I'm excited. I'm juiced.
Yeah. Closing us out, though, we got the banger of the weekend, I guess, because you had one a couple days back. But I don't know. I don't know how you feel about the song, but I'm my swerve in that corner. Oh.
I'm rolling. Hey, put that new Jello on. Put that new Jello on.
Exactly, bro. I think I don't know. It's really catchy. It's got, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. Something about it just feels right.
That's where so. We're in that whoa.
Put it on. Put the thing on. I don't know. I've been listening to it a decent amount. I don't know. Something about it makes you feel good, bro.
That old is hilarious. Track.
You see, I know you've seen it. All the things on Twitter where it's like, they got the old school like highlight films and stuff. Like I seen an NFL Street run. They got the dude running on the wall. Like
that's hilarious, dude. That is so funny. Man. All right. Well, that being said, enjoy Wild Card Weekend. We'll see you for the divisional round, and also the college football playoff national championship. But until then, we got our guy. Take us out, Ray Ray. Another night and you've been knocking at my window. I wouldn't answer if I took my own advice. You gave me something that I wanted to believe in. I give up hope when every morning comes much tomorrow.
that's all it's about. Everybody want to figure out how complicated life is and break it down.
On a different level, baby, we got something special. I ain't really been the same since the day I met you. I know we fuss, I know we fight, but that's alright, cause I ain't trying to do that with no one else. Girl, you my type, and I know you like, and you know what I like. Phone calls late at night, baby, girl, you doing it right. Damn, here I go again. I just been stuck on you, you heroin. I blow with the wind, and it's over again. Look what I did, made a little change. I'm a little older, but I'm still the same. Shit is a trip, how people be playing and really be listening to what I be saying. Damn, I mean, I came a long way, girl. I hope you listening to what I got to say, girl. I ain't trying to play these games, man, I'm done with that. And if you want me to stop it, then I'll be done with rap. I'm having fun with that, I'm really doing it. Look at me, I had a dream, now I'm pursuing it. I'm reminiscing about the times that we used to have, and everything that we used to do when we used to laugh. It's been a minute, I wanna know how you been, though. Close my eyes and hope you knocking at my window. 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 Yeah.
Keep going on, war gonna keep going on, frustration gonna keep going on, anger gonna keep going on, till we finally go back down to the simplest word, love.
If I got you and you got me, then we found a treasure. We gon' last forever, even if we not together. This that feeling you can't replace or replicate. Memories, they be hitting me like a heavyweight. Gotta keep it straight, straight, straight. You say you leaving and I'm like, wait, wait, wait. Gotta make a play, what do I say? Where do I go? What do I do? And I just feel like I'm losing my time, cause all of the time I'm thinking about you. You my boo, what do I do? Girl, I don't know. I'm still waiting for you to come to a show. So I guess I just be writing till my fingers bleed. You know I got you whenever you in your time of need. Another poem to express myself. I'm trying to let my guard down, I can't help myself, I mean that. And I'm trying to let you know I need that. Tell them other clowns I trying to spit game, ease back, hey. I mean I got a lot I wanna say, but for now to seduce, sit back and press play. I'm reminiscing about the times that we used to have, and everything that we used to do when we used to laugh. It's been a minute, I wanna know how you been, though. Close my eyes and hope you knocking at my window. Knocking at my window. Knocking at my window. Knocking at my window. Knocking at my window.